We are now almost a minute over stoppage time. Kieran Trippier just wants to get on with it.
It is the stuff that dreams are made of. Cambridge United have come to Newcastle and they have beaten Newcastle. Cambridge United join the ranks of FA Cup giant killers. Joe Ironside with the goal. Dimi Mitov with a standout goalkeeping display. Newcastle had no answer. They tried and tried and tried again. But Cambridge United are the name going into round four. This famous old trophy has another famous result and a famous giant killing.
Welcome to Under the Habin, Under the Abbey Stand. I'm Jack Swindlehurst, and it wasn't a dream. It really did happen. Little old Cambridge went up to the tune and beat the richest team in the world. Today we look back on one of the best days in Cambridge's history, and we're going to wax lyrical about an unbelievable Saturday afternoon at St James's Park. 48 hours on, how have you recovered? Julian Roberts, take the floor.
I mean, I don't really know where to start with all this. This is mental. It's an absolute pleasure to be joined by every one of the UTAS team here. I think you should have started with that. Look at that, we've got all five of us.
I love that Squindle laughed at Lincoln as well.
Yeah.
It's just not over being at St. James's Park, just having digs at the rest of League One.
That's the dulcet tones of Jordan Morland there. We've also joined by Owen Kiernan. Hello.
Hello, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, just about recovered. Clearly not recovered enough because I forgot to introduce everyone, but, you know, that's how it goes. And lastly, but not leastly, Tom Walker.
Yeah, good to be back. What did I say last week? Clean sheets. They're a platform to build on.
Well, you're not wrong. An incredible day out for all of the nearly 5,000 Cambridge fans that made the trip up there. I mean, we were expecting a victory, weren't we? But the manner of it was pretty good. Yeah, so Julian, have you recovered? By the sounds of your gravelly tones, maybe not quite.
No, not really, but I'm sort of just trying to own this sort of new husky tones of mine. So that's sort of like the biggest thing to come out.
I like
the weekend.
It. Yeah, I like it. George, I'm very aroused, sat here.
Is this the first time you have ever been aroused in a while? I hope so.
We've not been talking about Martin Butler.
Yeah. No, Jack, mate. I mean, what the f***? What the f***? Mental weekend. I honestly, I've spent all day today avoiding doing any work and just watching that 10-minute video of the celebrations at the end of the game on repeat. What a quality weekend.
Incredible scenes. Social media has just, in the last 24 to 48 hours, been absolutely mental. As a Cambridge fan and as a UTAS proprietor as well, Tom, just how good was Saturday and how are you feeling, mate?
It was pretty good. It was good. I knew it was going to be a good day when we were sat in a Wetherspoons in Newcastle in not the early hours of the morning, but it wasn't late. And you look at the menu and it's 99 pence for certain brands of beer. You can't go wrong. And at that point, you're thinking, if you do win the game, we're in some serious trouble here. It was really good. I mean, I think without talking about the game too much at this point, because I think that's in some respects, I guess, the least of our concerns. It was just a kind of perfect away day, I think. I'm sure I could go into more detail, but I wouldn't be saying anything that's not already been said before. I mean, it's been a pretty mental sort of 48 hours, really. Just sort of taking everything afterwards. First on match of the day, national attention in the media, you know, fans, you know, on every sort of channel, you know, that's kind of imaginable. People taking an interest in Cambridge United that haven't done for many years, and good to see them back. And people that have been going for a long time, you know, basking in it, rightly so. Start to finish, just a pretty remarkable weekend, and one that I don't know about you lot. I'm probably not going to forget too quickly. Obviously, if Lincoln Away goes and beats it.
Imagine if Lincoln Away is better than that. What would have to happen?
Well, we've sold about 300 tickets for Lincoln Away far. So we'd need to win about 50-0 for it to counterbalance. But I mean, yeah, we can go into more detail and wax lyrical about how good it was. But Ali Hunter got in touch, Jordan, and asked us, where does this game rank in your years supporting the club? So you and Owen, obviously, the veterans of the pod, let's say. For you, where does this rank in, you know, your all-time Cambridge United games?
I mean, I'm completely over it already and I'm just fully focusing on the Papa John's trophy tomorrow night. So I don't know why everyone's so excited. No, it's incredible, isn't it? Like, I was starting to come down a little bit, you know, this morning, and then I turn on the news and BBC News breakfast show are talking about us. Like, what are we doing on BBC News? Then I log into work, and I work for a company where we've got offices all around the world, and people from our India office and our Madrid office, like, just pop up on instant messages saying, oh my God, I watched the game. What an incredible day. What an incredible achievement. To come back to Ali's question about, you know, where does it rank in sort of all your years supporting the club? I mean, it's right up there. It's got to be right up there with some of the all-time classic cup games that I can think of, like Man United at home and Notts Forest away and things like that. I would say, because I've seen a lot of people sort of comparing it to the Gateshead promotion game. I think if you compare the two, and if you talk about best games, I look at things that like significance and things like how iconic the result is. And I think Gateshead, I would say, is probably the more significant one, because it was the culmination of something so prolonged, and it felt like we're on the verge of you know, sort of dropping out of kind of being relevant. So even though Gateshead wasn't anywhere near as enjoyable as Saturday was, it was just this unbridled relief and passion over something. So I think Gateshead, the playoff game, just pips it, but my God, it runs it really close. You know, like the disbelief of it all, the occasion, the unexpectedness of the performance and the results, like Tom said, all the attention that it's got us, it's a moment I'll never forget. Those, you know, the scenes at the end of a moment that I'll never forget. And it feels like one of those I was there moments. And, you know, I've been thinking a lot recently about my longevity and stuff like that. And I just think, like, this is the kind of moment that I would tell my kid and potentially grandkids about, you know. And it's one of those things, because it's the FA Cup third round, it comes round every year. Like, every year you're going to have that chance to chew off someone's ear about that time little old Cambridge went up to St James's Park, beat a full strength Newcastle side, the richest team in the world. It's just incomprehensible, really, isn't it?
It really is. Owen, we were chatting the other day and you said, actually, during that Gateshead game, you enjoyed quite a lot of that game. So same question to you. Where does this game rank in all your years supporting the club then?
Yeah, again, definitely up there. I enjoyed the bit of the Gateshead game where we were 2-0 up and I thought, yeah, we're going to do it. And then when they pulled one back, but the enjoyment suddenly turned to massive, massive nerves.
Owen, what would you say was longer, the injury time in the Gateshead final or the VAR check for Ironside's goal?
Oh Christ, very close.
So I know the actual answer is obviously the injury time, but I swear that VAR check felt like it was running it close.
Yeah, it did. I think the injury time, just because we knew that if he was, you know, you could tell Miller was down, he was quite badly injured at the time, and but we'd used our three subs, so we knew that, you know, however long he was down for, we were going to be down to 10 men for. Yeah, like you said, George, the significance of the Gateshead game was huge. But as a spectacle, even as a weekend, like, you know, a lot of us live in London or have lived in London, and, you know, a weekend at Wembley's not really that special. You know, there's not much there, is there? I mean, a weekend at Wembley as a you know, as a destination, as somewhere to go, it's not really very special. Obviously, playing at the ground really is, but. You know, Newcastle is just a fantastic city, isn't it? It's just a really, really lovely city, really, you know, quite welcoming. You know, their fans are very, very friendly. more importantly, it's just a nicely compact city, isn't it? You know, you come out of a train station, you're pretty much straight into the city centre, and then the other side of the city centre, you've got the football ground. So yeah, it was a fantastic weekend, wasn't it?
I also just wanted to echo what I was saying there, that something that we've put on Twitter already is just how nice Geordies are. I mean, they're the most gracious in defeat of any fan that I've ever come across personally. There's that, like, there's those moments after games where you bump into opposition fans and you get an instant sort of reflection of what, you know, obviously like the majority of the feeling of their fan base. And every single one after the game was like, you boys deserved that 100%. Great support, just couldn't be more complimentary about us. And you could sort of forgive them for being a bit like, I mean, look, with this little old Cambridge, like you could forgive them for being fuming and that we got away with it. We had a kid. Yeah, right, exactly, yeah. But absolutely none of that. So I just wanted to shout them out. Not that any of them would be listening, because can you imagine what Tone fan would be listening to?
I don't know, loads of them have followed us now, so they might be listening.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, pardon me, in the case that... they are listening, allow me to be the one that is the petulant, arrogant, gloaty one. Do you wonder, do you guys reckon that the chairman that flew in from Riyadh to watch the game, literally all the way across the world, do you think Amanda Staveley, who brokered a £305 million deal using the blood money of a petro state to buy a Premier League football club, would have been happy watching them get knocked out by Cambridge United? It's not for me to say, but I don't think
I've speculated on what have you heard that like the chairman went down into the changing rooms afterwards. I've speculated a lot on what he would have said to them there.
He was just standing there sharpening two massive machetes.
Yeah, heady out.
I reckon he'd have just gone in and gone, so which one of you is Joe Ironside?
Probably just went in with the jerry can instead of like champagne, but just like shaking it about. Oh, no.
This is libel, boys. This is libel. Yeah. The state of Saudi Arabia after us.
Yeah, we know what we do to journalists they don't agree with, don't we?
You're right, let's...
this is meant to be a cheery pod.
Still finding that negative angle, well done. So let's move on to the game itself. We were all there, primed and ready to go. There was a festival, carnival feel. And I think in the week beforehand, we spoke to a couple of different publications and podcasts, and there was a feel from both sets of fans, a sellout crowd, 52,000 people in St. James's. Mike Ashley's gone, everything's good in the world for them. We're taking nearly 5,000 people. Before the game, there was a real buzz about the city, wasn't there? And yeah, in that run-up to the game, Jordan, how was that for you, being in that city amongst all those fans?
It's just incredible, isn't it, that at the age of 39, Wes Houlihan still gets all these various fans so excited to see him in their city. It was great to see. No, it was a really great atmosphere, sort of pre-game, and you know, just to echo what Julian said about the Newcastle fans and the city, like it's just weird, isn't it, that you don't have a dedicated away pub and the police are like, yeah, go wherever, you'll be fine. The atmosphere around the ground was really lovely as well, sort of, you know, everyone was really helpful and just sort of looking up at this big iconic you know, proper English football ground as you get there, and it's the center of the city. It was all quite awe-inspiring, and you know, just sat in a pub before the game, sort of talking about how you know, for the first time in the whole sort of week leading up to the game, sort of talking about small little positives about it. You know, for you know, the days going into the game, I was convinced it'd be a routine, you know, 3-1, 4-1 result, maybe a bit like what we saw at Spurs and Liverpool. Maybe we'd take an early lead, but then it would be us quite comprehensively being beaten by a weaker sort of Premier League sort of the lineup. Sort of before the game, I was just sort of saying to myself, well, you know, just a little bit of magic might be what swings the game for us. And in reality, it's actually the opposite. You know, what we saw was a very Cambridge United, very Mark Bonner performance. We were organised, we had a plan, we were hardworking. And what we've not mentioned yet on this discussion is, you know, we won the game and there was no element of luck or chance or fluke about it. You know, we had numerous sort of opportunities, and we kept a very full strength Newcastle team at bay as well. You know, it wasn't like a smash and grab last minute, you know, against a run of play goal for us. We fully deserved that win.
Do you know who Newcastle reminded me of? They reminded me of Cambridge United a little bit, in that when we scored, their heads just dropped, didn't they? They, you know, they weren't great before it, but they were dreadful afterwards. They, you know, even during the VAR check, they'd all lined back up ready for the kickoff. They, you know, they were just, it was like watching us under Calderwood or Joe Dunn. Like, as soon as we scored, you just never thought they'd get back into it, really, did you?
No, not at all. I think just to add on to what Jordan was saying there as well, I mean, he's absolutely right to say that we deserved it through our performance. And I know that I think mostly in the first half, Newcastle, as you'd expect, you know, a full-strength Premier League team, albeit not a very good Premier League team at this point, to do. They controlled the ball quite a lot. They worked a lot of shots at Mitov, who, you know, I'm sure we'll come on to and obviously apply the appropriate amount of praise on, because he deserves it, probably above and beyond anyone else, to be honest. But I think what was quite impressive was that, probably aside from the Murphy offside goal, which was obviously offside, and the reason it's offside is because we held our line quite well, they didn't cut us apart at all. I think there was maybe one moment in the first half where Trippier got in behind, as in Kieran Trippier, of about a few months ago, who won La Liga, who's recently played in the European Championships final. If really there's only that moment in the game where he gets in behind, I think it kind of sums up in itself what a good performance it is. And to add on to that as well, I mean, look, let's talk about the fact that we absolutely should have had a penalty in the first half. Like, absolutely should have had a penalty in the first half. And Lancaster has a goal ruled out as well. So we had not just, like, you know, like Jordan says, it's not just a smash and grab win where we've just got a goal out of nothing. Like, there were times in the game where we showed what we could do at the other end as well. But clearly the game's won through our organisation and, you know, the sort of tactical plan that we went into it with. But again, something I'm sure we'll come on to talk about is, again, a characteristic of a Mark Bonner team, is just the amount of passion and sort of desire and just a will to win a football match that they showed. It makes you quite proud to be a Cambridge fan. I think we talked about it we've obviously talked about it in weeks gone by, and I'm sure it won't be the last time. But that moment at the end where Harrison dunked it, one square in the face, knocked him clean out, sort of flat out on the floor, and then he just up, ruffles his hair a little bit, and he's up defending the next corner. Yeah, just kind of summed up the afternoon, I think, you know, down to a T, really.
Yeah, certainly an interesting start to the game, and Cambridge United's first experience with VAR, Julian. It was a clear penalty. We've had a few questions in from you guys, obviously buzzing as well. Richard Nurse was asking, why wasn't that a penalty? And I think the answer, Julian, is it was, right?
Yeah, I'm a bit confused. I thought it was fairly stonewall at the time, and every replay I've personally seen has done nothing to change my mind on that. What I find confusing is they did look at it, right? I mean, play stopped, but I don't know how. This has sort of been my problem with VAR a lot of the time, is like, they sort of stop and look at stuff and then still come to what seems to be quite clearly the wrong decision. I don't know, like, is there an argument to say that that would have been a worse time to score than when we actually did? Because I think Owen's right, like, there was only half an hour left in the game when we did end up scoring. And I think he's spot on in what he said about Newcastle's heads dropping. They just took a team sort of devoid of, like, any sort of team spirit, confidence, like, togetherness, very, like, all the opposite things that you'd say that Cambridge United are full of. But yeah, like, the penalty, it looked fairly stonewall to me. And from what I gather, the ref actually, I don't know if this is right, but the ref actually gave the free kick the other way because Nibs handled the ball, because he just picked it up, which is why I didn't give a yellow for the dive, which is what I was really confused about at the time, because I thought he was giving it as a dive, so it should have been a yellow as well. Anyway, look, in conclusion, I was convinced it was a stonewall pen, and we were getting texts and stuff from people following at home that Sky Sports and ESPN and everyone was saying it was stonewall. So yeah, I think we can feel fairly hard done by there, actually.
I think your point about scoring at the wrong time, the right time, is spot on, and actually it kind of echoes Joshy Coulson's chance against Man United. Like, yeah, if he'd scored early against them, would we have drawn that game and got the replay? Probably not. yeah, I was disappointed that it wasn't a penalty. More than anything, I was disappointed because I've spent weeks saying to Tom Walker, the man who absolutely hates VAR, that VAR is going to give us a penalty. And then for it to not happen was, so I felt close. Pretty sheepish. Yeah, kind of ruined the afternoon, really.
George actually walked out at that moment.
Yeah, what happened in the rest of the game?
Yeah.
Well, it was certainly, one of many kind of moments of incident, and not necessarily all bad incident, but there's plenty that happened in the game. Tom, you mentioned it already, but a couple of saves from Dimi early on to kind of get his confidence up, a good save down to his right-hand side. On Mitov, Tom, did he do anything wrong for you on Saturday?
I mean, no. I mean, bar scoring, what else can you do? I think on a serious note, I mean, I think the stat is he made 9 saves overall in the game. And I think the brilliant thing about a goalkeeper in football is that some of the things that they can do on a pitch, and it doesn't matter what level of the game that you play at, there's certain moments of games where a goalkeeper can do something that you look at, and that could be from any fixture, from the very, very top of the football pyramid, from the very, very pinnacle of elite level European football, right down towards regional league football and anything like that. And I think there was 2 saves in particular that were genuinely world-class. I mean, the one that's obviously getting talked about a lot is the one right at the end from Joe Linton's header from the corner. Clearly, A, it's a really good save, which it obviously is, but B, the context, it being the 95th minute is what obviously makes it even more dramatic. But I think the one that kind of took my breath away a little bit at the time, but I didn't realise how good a save it was, is the one from the Jacob Murphy volley. Because, I mean, it's not an exaggeration to say there's like a split second, I think, of the ball leaving Jacob Murphy's foot to Mitov having to get up to it and tip it onto the bar. And I guess I also need to say that, years gone by on this podcast, I've been...
here we go.
This is where I was going.
I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, I've been at times critical of Dimi Mitov, and I'm not going to sit here and say that not all of it was justified, but what we've seen over the last probably six months, at least maybe a year, has been someone who's gone from being a goalkeeper who's trying to make his way as a professional footballer in League Two, wasn't playing much, wasn't really getting much of a chance. When he did, performances were fairly iffy. But the progression from there to now has been absolutely phenomenal, realistically, to a point where he's now established himself as a League One goalkeeper. And look, if we are to get relegated in the season, for example, he could probably realistically be with a shout of getting another League One move. And the other thing, which I think is absolutely massive for him, and hopefully is the next step for him, is that call up for Bulgaria. Because there's, I think the I saw someone post somewhere that there's the last national team squad for Bulgaria that got announced, 3 goalkeepers, all from the Bulgarian league. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like everything about Bulgarian football, but I know it's not of the highest standard. One of them was 33, one of them was 32. So they're going to be looking for at least one goalkeeper to come into that squad at some point. I'm not saying that Mitov's going to come in and start every game that they ever play, but he'll get that call up at some point, and it'll be so richly deserved. And I'm sure there's other, like Iredale, for example, is another one that we'll look at that. But obviously Ironside's the goal scorer, and he's the one that takes a lot of the headlines and makes all the back pages. But I think I'll probably speak for a lot of Cambridge United fans and a lot of people probably around the world, to be honest, now, to say that Mitov's performance on Saturday was, probably one of the highest quality individual performances that I've ever seen from a Cambridge United player. It was absolutely phenomenal.
Do you think, Tom, that we finally settled the Burton-Mitov debate?
I'm still trying to
work out Burton.
How would Callum Burton have gone?
I'm still trying to work out if we're going to extend Uche Pierce's contract.
You're spot on. Mitov's performance was just unreal. And you felt going into the game that, everyone playing to their maximum ability would keep you in the game, but someone would have to go like one step beyond that and be truly inspired to really cause some sort of upset. And I just spent, you know, all those saves in the first half, I've just thought were terrific. And I just had like this sort of mindset of like, well, it's just nice to keep us in it, isn't it? You know, they'll score eventually, but it'd be nice if we got to half time and it was 0-0. Maybe if we got to an hour and it was still 0-0, you know, we still had something to play. But the fact that he kept it going for 95 minutes was purely sensational. And his interview afterwards as well, like the character, the emotion that comes across, it's just something we haven't really seen too much from him. His time at the club, because he's not obviously been interviewed that much, was a really nice side to see. And the story kind of writes itself, right? He shares a house with Joey Ironside. One scores, one makes all the saves at the other end. It's just ties into that perfect FA Cup win narrative.
Yeah, absolutely. Proper Roy of the Rovers house, that one. And yeah, great to see Dimi just coming into his own on the world stage. And yeah, just consistently being incredible in that game. Just moving forward in the game, moving into the second half, Newcastle with that early goal, disallowed eventually through VAR, kind of correct decision, I think. Julian, did you think that Cambridge were going to be able to maintain the levels they had in the first half, or really was there a part of you that kind of thought we were going to kind of unwind as it got, as the second half went on?
Yeah, I don't know. It's sort of a tough one to like, to look back on, because looking back at it just sort of seems to me like we got more and more confident every 5 minutes that we played. It was like we were always going to stay in the game, but that's sort of knowing the result now. If you'd have asked me that at the time, I don't think that's what I'd have said. But like I thought there was absolutely no reason that we couldn't maintain those levels. And it goes back to again what Owen mentioned earlier and what we were talking about with Newcastle in that second half. Once we scored, I don't think that they definitely couldn't pick up their level enough to break us down. And like Tom says, like how many chances did they really, how many times did they really open us up, especially after that goal. So I suppose the answer to the question is yeah, like there was no reason why I didn't think we could maintain those levels. But then there's also this, again, we talked about it after the Pompey game, which is we still have that luxury of bringing Wes Hoolahan off the bench. And I can only imagine, and I'm probably putting this is something that I've just always thought, is that like someone of that quality and who's been there and done it everywhere, he must just give players just a tiniest boost. They have no idea how much that might be worth over the course of the game. Just that little bit of confidence, settle some nerves. He's been here. He's been to that stage before. You know, he's of all the players there, he'd have been felt the most at ease. So, it just those little things that we've got the luxury of in our squad is massive.
He scored at the Euros, Julian. I don't know if you know that.
I did actually watch that this morning.
Every morning,
yeah.
Because I mean, you mentioned that bench, Julian. You mentioned we have Wes on the bench, you know, and all the experience he brings on. But there's four other players on that bench, but I don't know if they had more than like two first-team appearances, certainly not in the league, between them.
No.
You know, I think a couple of them were playing for like Ainsbury Rovers and Haverhill Rovers on loan earlier this season, and there they are sitting on the bench in front of 52,000 at St James's Park. You know, Newcastle can complain that they didn't have a recognised striker on the pitch, but, you know, they still had Joe Linton, who was 40 million quid. They still had St Maximin, you know, who can score goals. And who did we have? Okay, we had Wes Hoolahan, but he's brilliant. But beyond that, we had Liam O'Neill and four others.
Yeah. And like, yeah, like Glenn McConnell and Kai Yearn, who I mean, must be, what, 17, 18 years old? I'm not sure exactly. But yeah, seriously impressive.
Yeah, not our strongest team beat the strongest team that Newcastle had to field, which is mental.
Yeah, certainly nice to see. And there was loads of conversations. There always is in the FA Cup about mismatches all over the field. But Cambridge, really, you couldn't find a weak link in that side, I don't think, if you look at it, even objectively, from the weekend. And then we get to the point, we get to the crux of the match. Well, not the crux of the match, but an incredibly, important point of the game. 56th minute, Ben Warman plays the ball forward. Harvey Nibbs getting in there quickly, giving Dubravka the problem to think about. We're then cleared off the line from Nibbs, and then Joey Ironside. And the thing that got me, and loads of people were saying this post-game when we were watching it in the pub and it was all on all the big screens, how good Joe Ironside's finish actually was. It wasn't like, because, you know, the reaction when we were there almost felt like it was a tap-in because, it was bouncing around, the ball went in. But actually, Joe Ironside, with his back to goal, completely blind to the goal, obviously he's in front of goal, but it's a great finish. And Tom, how, you know, just describe the moments as and when that goal went in.
Yeah, I mean, well, just to kind of pick up from what you were saying there, firstly about the actual goal itself. I mean, probably like, I know for a fact you guys, and I'm going to guess that pretty much everyone listening to this has seen it now, at least three figures. I mean, I think I did that today. But one of the things that I picked up from the highlights of that's kind of underlines how brave we were, I think, in terms of our performance, is that there are multiple times where runners get beyond Ironside. And I think at times this season, just in terms of, I guess, like a tactical perspective, that's maybe been a bit of a problem for us, that the ball goes up to Ironside and there's not a lot beyond him. But Warman obviously picks out the pass to May, who's made, you know, a big run into the box. And then you could kind of, you know, when you see it back, I'm not sure if it's something that everyone noticed at the time, there's like a moment where Ironside and Nibs and Warman and May, like, they just kind of realise it's on, and like there's a chance there. And you know, obviously it bubbles around a little bit and obviously ends up falling to Ironside. And I think the angle, funnily enough, that shows it best in terms of the quality of the finish is probably the one that the fan has filmed from the away end, because you see obviously where the man is on the line. And I think most strikers would just have tried to get anything on it and would have basically tried to find a bit of the goal that they could see, which is the bottom right-hand corner. And I think probably the man on the line can get to that. Whereas where Ironside actually puts it, and I'm obviously not sure how aware he was of the man on the line and where he was stood, but he basically kind of wrong foots him a little bit, because he's managed to pick out it ends up going in the middle, but it's kind of the left-hand centre of it, if that kind of makes sense. And clearly then it's, I'm sure there's been, you know, more articulate people than me that can describe what happened after that than me. But clearly I think the word carnage, chaos, pandemonium, bedlam, whatever adjective you want to use to describe how just purely utterly fucking mental it went in that stand, I'm sure we'll be apt. And I think Mitov actually said it in his interview, but I mean, I don't know about you guys, but if we were going to go and win that game 1-0 and there was going to be a goal scorer on the day, I'm so happy it was Joe Ironside. Because I mean, we've talked a lot about how last season, despite having a very, very good season, you know, individually, you know, he was pretty much overshadowed by obviously the season that Paul Mullen had. But this season, he stepped up so well, and you know, in I guess a more difficult league than he's probably used to. He's not always got his reward for that. You know, come up against, you know, referees that don't want to give him a foul. You know, centre halves, you don't give him an inch, and for him to have that moment to be able to just, you know, stick one in. For 5,000 away fans, it's pretty special, I can imagine.
Pretty incredible scenes when it went in. I don't think we've had scenes quite like that for a while. I think a lot of Cambridge United fans slightly stumped or, you know, outfoxed by how steep it was, including myself. When I started to celebrate, I felt myself falling onto the very small woman in front.
There's a brilliant video on Twitter of Ryan Johnson, a friend of the pod, flying down the away end. I think you can find on CFC Direct Twitter. It's brilliant. But just on Ironside, can I just mention this as well? What I didn't realise he did at the time was also do the Shearer celebration. I mean, that's great, isn't it? Isn't that great? That's class.
There was some great build-up to that game. And talking to the Newcastle pod, you know, Ironside, a young Newcastle fan in his youth, born in Middlesbrough, and like, you know, a dream for him to play in front of the fans at Newcastle. And when he was asked if he picked up anything from watching Shearer, he just basically responded saying, "Well, actually, I was 9, so probably not." But yeah, he's absolutely he's won more fans than he had, and he had a good few. So Jordan, obviously, pandemonium as the goal went in, but still a good wedge of the game left. Just give me a potted history of how difficult watching that last half an hour was for you and how you felt.
I had this kind of sort of tense feeling in my chest that I've not had since the equaliser in the Stevenage playoffs, where we'd come from like 3-1 down and the second goal on the day that sent it into extra time. It was this mixture of just sheer excitement and passion, but inside I was like, oh, I'm not sure my blood pressure or my heart's gonna keep up with this. It was incredible. I spent the rest of the game either joining in with the chants, or if I wasn't chanting, I was just there under my breath, and sorry to turn this into a sweary pod, just under my breath, just constantly saying "f-ing hell" out loud. Like, that's how I got through those sort of last sort of 40 minutes. It was a great time to score as well. It was kind of the time that I thought that Newcastle would get us. And my friend Matt, who listens to the pod, sent me a message afterwards that I wanted to read out because I think it's brilliant. But he said that, so he was in the Cambridge End and then he went out afterwards like we all did. But he said one of the bouncers at the pub that he was in just came up to them, saw they were a group of Cambridge United fans, and said that when our goal went in, he was on his way to work. He was walking to work, heard the noise, and because it was so loud, just assumed it was Newcastle, got his phone out, checked it, and then saw that it was actually a Cambridge United goal. That I think goes to show, you know, just the extent of the celebration. But then maybe it wasn't that celebration, maybe it was the second celebration a few minutes later after the VAR check, which, you know, look, I'm not mad keen on VAR, I'm sure most people aren't, but if for all its negatives, letting us have that second moment, that was brilliant. Like, that was, you know, what is better than having like an amazing experience? Well, just getting to have it again, like a 2 minutes later.
Yeah, certainly. It was a tense 2 minutes. Like you said, it felt longer. And I had a couple in front of me who were saying that they had people who were watching it, and the people who were watching it like away from the ground were telling them that it was definitely disallowed. There was a load of like conversations like that when it came up. Incredible. And then Julian, after that, you know, a great kind of seeing out of the game. Obviously, there was a couple of chances here and there. Dimi Mitov getting the plaudits. But just a word on the rest of the defence. How well did our, you know, let's be honest, makeshift defence play in that game on Saturday?
Yeah, I think it's easy to forget just how makeshift they are, right? We just got quite used to them over the past few months. We've spoken about Idel a lot. Harrison Dunk has been mentioned earlier today as well, like the way he's found a new level in the league and obviously in the cup. Just so organised, just so resolute, so organised. Just all these things we always talk about, Mark Bonner's teams, and they just work so hard for each other. I mean, even someone like Harvey Nibbs, who I brought someone along who isn't a Cambridge fan, it's their first Cambridge game, and I was sort of, you know, giving a bit of a rundown of a few players, and with Nibbs, I was like, you know, he's improving.
he tries
his very, very best. No, I thought he had a brilliant game, honestly. I thought he was really good going forwards and backwards, with giving protection to Williams, who we probably don't speak about George Williams enough, but he is brilliant. And just as a little side note, in those videos at the end, you can tell how much it means to George Williams. He is like a fully bought in paid member of this Cambridge United squad, as much as your Digbys and everyone who yeah, Jack's just doing the old darts straight away there. I mean, all those little clips, I mean, they still make me smile now.
I've got to mention his interview as well. He went on, TalkSport?
TalkSport, yeah.
I think one of the first questions they ask him is something to the effect of, oh, what was it like marking as Alan Saint-Maximin? He's like, yeah, it was fine.
No, he says, I didn't see what all the fuss is about.
Yeah.
there's also a brilliant bit at the end where they're all taking a photo together and he just reaches into his pocket and goes, oh, there's Saint-Maximin. And throws it out.
Just coming back to Nibs really quickly on Julian's point there, you know, look, obviously we've spoken a lot about him his whole time at the club. I'm sure we will continue to talk about him for however long he remains with us, as will every other fan. You know, he's pretty divides opinion, doesn't he? But whatever happens for the remainder of his Cambridge career, he will always have that assist at Newcastle on his history, you know, and it was a pretty brilliant, okay, no, it wasn't a direct assist, it was a shot that was saved and parried to Ironside, but the speed and the awareness to pinch that ball off their goalkeeper was terrific. And I think that's kind of been overlooked, you know, because the ball in from Warman was incredible. May's run was great, although admittedly was offside. Thank you, Jonjo Shelvey, for that little touch, by the way. Ironside's finish, like Tom says, completely fools two people on the line. Two people that every time I've watched a goal back, I'm adamant are just going to stick a leg out and stop it. But what gets overlooked is, you know, Nibs's awareness and speed to actually resuscitate that movement and get it back on track.
My first thought was that Nibs had fouled the goalkeeper when I saw the goalie down on the floor, because Ironside wasn't offside. That was clear as day. And you'd have thought that if Adam May was, that the referee would have pulled it back earlier. So when, because there's that moment before they put it up on the screen saying possible offside, wasn't there? When the referee was kind of contemplating it, and it felt like hours. But I was just like, okay, Nibs has fouled him. It's definitely going to be disallowed. They're going to look at it. They're going to see Nibs kick him or stand on his foot or do whatever, something to him. But they're like, no, it's being reviewed for its offside. And I don't know. It wasn't at all. Okay, maybe it was, but...
Yeah. And just like the way the ref was even like standing by the keeper and stuff. I know it said offside, but that was still the thing that was going through my head. Like, has Nibs actually fouled in there? Is that, I don't know if there's a mistake on the screen. I don't know.
A lack of trust in the good old boy, Harvey Nibs.
Yeah. We've done him dirty here. He played brilliantly.
I think we've done him massively dirty in the fact that we've got to remember who scored the winner in the last round as well with 2 minutes to go.
That's a fair point.
You know, that was Nibs. And I also slated him on the podcast on Tuesday saying, I think we should get someone else in and he should go out on loan. So just on Iredale, just as we're moving on throughout the game, of course, Cambridge United managing the game pretty well. I don't want to put any negativity into this pod, but a positive look at it. There's a lot of talk about Jack Iredale. With interest from other clubs, and Sam's been in touch, basically asking how much money would we accept, to lure Iredale away at this point, and if he's too kind of indispensable, really.
No money at all, because we don't really have many other options. I'll be honest, I'm pretty much resigned to the fact that he's gone in the summer. There's these Preston rumours that have resurfaced again. There's Wigan rumours coming in this today as well. I don't think there'll be any money for us to sell him in January, even though it might make sense to cash in now, just because of the sheer lack of numbers that we've got. You know, maybe if Jones and Taylor were back sooner, they might contemplate selling him, but I can't see it myself. But he's just been outstanding this season, and his partnership with Okadina as well is really, really developing and blossoming. They seem to have a good awareness, and one of the things that really, you know, I guess we've seen it the times they play together, but really stood out on Saturday was just how calm and easy they were in possession of the ball and playing out from the back. So long may it continue. And surely Mark Bonner's going to bring in some central defenders this window, because numbers are so light. But you look at games like Saturday and think, well, does he need them, because they're performing so well?
Owen, what does your cat make to it all?
You might have noticed, for those that just listened to this, he's black and white through and through, the cat. he was pretty upset.
You're certainly interested to see what happens with Iredale. But like you say, Jordan, credit to the whole defence for just being composed. And just a word, as we spoke before, Owen, about Harrison Dunk. I think there was a lot of questions about whether him coming in back into the squad, especially in a defensive role, would work, especially at this level. Just how good has he been in the past few games, and how good was he against Newcastle?
He was immense, wasn't he? He's like a fine wine, Harrison Dunk. It's a cliche to say it, but he just gets better and better, doesn't he? Like, last season, everyone sang his praises. He kind of swapped positions a little bit with Iredale. He ended up playing more defensive, more of a left back. He's carried that on this year. He's just brilliant, isn't he? He's an absolute club legend. I don't know how many games he's played for us now. Well over 400, isn't it? He's been here 10 years. Yeah, what more can you say about Harrison Dunk?
Yeah, just amazing longevity and just consistency, really, from Harrison. And just so nice for him. You know, shame that Greg couldn't be out there, you know, playing on the pitch, but we all know he was there and celebrating at the end. But for Harrison to be there with all the players and just, you know, being not just a kind of part, you know, part of the team and coming off the bench for the last 10, but, you know, a really important cog in that machine and proving his worth and all the doubters, probably myself included, at the start of the season to whether he would be able to cut it at this level. And it's just so nice to see. And just, yeah, a player that we don't always, you know, hear from, you know, particularly vocally, again, hearing from him in the interviews after the game has just been a real pleasure and, yeah, just making the team proud. Kind of moving on from that, Russ asks, you know, off the back of those scenes at the end, I think personally for me, I've been to quite a lot of football games in different countries and different leagues and different levels. And, you know, the scenes at the end of that game, the elation, I think kind of encapsulated everything that's been going on in the past few years. And it's just such an amazing, like, outpouring of emotion. And he asks, have you ever cried at the end of the game? Not that he necessarily was, but I think there was a few tears shed there at the end of the game, Julian.
Yeah, there was loads of people around me who were incredibly emotional. I've got to say, I was personally more delirious. That was more my reaction to it. It was less teary for me and more emotional. I have cried at a game. I cried at the Gateshead game, but I think that might be the only one that I've cried at off the top of my head. It is something to be said here, Jack. You mentioned it there, sort of like the outpouring of emotion. That's like we got last season, but we didn't get to be there for any of it. It just sort of felt like that reward of like missing all of that in person, obviously. And just, yeah, obviously being able to be there. And then even more so, because if you'd have asked me a week ago, or I mean, definitely 2 weeks ago, but even a week ago, would we have been going to Newcastle? I was still quite sceptical with, you know, everything that we don't need to go into with COVID and stuff. So to be able to be there, it was, yeah, it's just sensational. I mean, it's one of the best days of my life, really. So I think that probably answers it.
I've seen performances so bad that I've wanted to cry.
Yeah.
But rarely so good and so joyful. One for the memory bank. Do you remember Rushden away on the last day of the season when we got relegated? That was a teary occasion. But that was kind of
the Rochdale game before that, which confirmed it, I think.
Yeah, no, I think Rushden was more about the pride, like the fact that there was such a big away following and we were so loud and we were singing about we'll be back. There was this sense of kind of unity and or united in endeavour, should we say, about that, that kind of made me proud and sort of brought on the tears. Whereas, yeah, like the game before we got relegated was tears because it was a big old pile of shit.
Yeah, it was a very emotional where we were stood as well, Tom. Just quickly before we move on, how are you feeling at the end of the game, mate?
yeah, happy, quite relieved, quite tired, not just because of the sort of emotional turmoil of the 90 minutes, but also because it's a fucking long way out to get to that away end. Yeah, I think what Julian says there is right. It kind of felt like it might not be the right word, but almost closure on not necessarily being there to see in person, although we, you know, managed to sort of have that sort of semi moment at the Abbey where the players are on the top of the turnstile, all that sort of stuff. And, you know, you managed to get a bit of a celebration with the team and that sort of stuff. But yeah, I think it kind of felt like it almost shut the book on that one. And it kind of gave us that moment that, we'd kind of lacked throughout last season. But on top of the fact that it's an away end of 5,000 people, there's a brilliant bit in the TV coverage where the final whistle goes. It goes to a picture of Joe Ironside, then it pans to the away end, and it looks like we've scored. Like I've not seen celebrations at a full time whistle like that probably ever. Maybe Wembley, but even that was just more people sort of like very relieved. Like this actually looked like the sort of, you know, mental that you get when the ball hits the back of the net. So it was pretty good.
Yeah, not like anything I've ever been involved with it full time, but yeah, incredible relief. You know, that game seemed to go on, and of course the Dimi save at the end. We've waxed lyrical about Dimi, and we will continue to for the rest of the season, I'm sure, because just, you know, an incredible performance. But, you know, we've had some standout performers this season, and, you know, we've mentioned, you know, the Ironside, we've mentioned players like that. But just before we wrap this bit up, gents, I would just like to, we've had a question from James Denton asking, who's the most underrated player this season? So starting with yourself, Jordan, who's your kind of tip for underrated player of the season?
Apologies, Tom Walker, because I know you are gearing up to say Jibril Kadena. I'm going to say Jibril Kadena, and I'm going to let Tom explain why in more detail. But I just think he's been, over the last couple of weeks, very quietly and assuredly making himself a first team regular. And I'm very excited by the fact that we've got him under contract for another season as well, because I think we are starting to see that we've got a little bit of a player on our hands there.
Yeah, probably.
Bag in, Tom.
Yeah. Thank you very much, George. Thanks very much for so eloquently leading me on to my opportunity. I'll wax lyrical about him as well. I think it's probably an argument he's our underrated player of last season as well, to be honest. But, you know, people that listen to this pod regularly will know from how I've talked about Jibril Kadena how highly I rate him personally. I think what we saw at Newcastle was the absolute epitome of what he is. He's so calm, he's composed, he's got that quality on the ball. You just don't really expect to see from defenders at this level. And look, the simple facts are these. Jibril Kadena will not play for Cambridge United for much longer. The ability that he's got and the knee slide that he did towards the end was a brilliant moment. But, I mean, the ability he's got with the ball at his feet, the composure that he's got, it's just something that you expect to see from like a 36-year-old centre-back who's like playing four or five leagues below where they've maybe had most of their career. And you're seeing it from a young lad. Obviously, Saturday's an exception because it's a Premier League club, but you're seeing it week in, week out in the league as well. It's pretty impressive. I mean, obviously, Jordan's given his answer, so I'll go on to another one as well. And I think the one that's gone under the radar even a little bit more is Ben Woolman. Literally within about 3 months, he's gone from being not really considered by anyone to be a part of the first team squad to getting in the squad for the trophy games every now and again, to maybe getting on at times and then starting the trophy games. And now he's literally a regular fixture in the league, and he's been trusted by Mark Bonner to go out and start away at a Premier League team. And obviously he made the goal, that we ended up scoring. And it's not just that one. I mean, he's played well in so many games. We've talked about that Morecambe goal time and time again that he scored on the volley. But another one who just like out of nowhere just looks so comfortable in League One. And I'll be the first one to say it on, you know, today, but we'll obviously come on to talk about the draw for the fourth round. But there's a player playing for Luton Town, Luke Berry, who Ben Woolman is starting to remind me of quite a lot. The appearance is quite similar. I think he wears his socks quite low, and there's certain elements of the energy that he's got in his game that sort of remind me, of a young Luke Berry a little bit. So he's one that's not just been playing well, but is very, very promising for the future.
Yeah, and he's got nice hair. Owen, anyone else for you unsung heroes so far this season?
Yeah, I'm going to say Adam May. In the middle, I've been pretty critical of him in the past, and he really, really frustrated me last season. I found him to be quite a difficult player to like. He was maybe a little bit negative in some of his aspects of play. We was obviously playing him next to Digby for a big part of last season, but this season he's kind of playing a little bit further forward, and to me, he's kind of thriving there. He's playing really quite well. He's a quiet player. He never does anything amazing every game. You know, he's not a Wes Houlihan, but he's got a great shot on him. He can score the odd goal, and he's committed. You can tell that by looking at him. You can tell that by the way he plays. And yeah, I think he's my unsung hero, really.
Absolutely, he certainly has upped his contributions going forward, but also being so solid and, of course, involved in the goal. This weekend, Julian, there's not many players left in the squad, but anyone you want to highlight as your unsung hero? Or
no one's mentioned Joe Ironside yet, have they? No.
No, that's a good call, actually.
Maybe.
Good shout.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know. I'd probably go for someone who actually didn't play at Newcastle. But I think for me, Sam Smith's had quite an under-radar season in terms of the amount of goals he scored playing out of position. He's missed a couple as well. We talked about those ones at Charlton and Rotherham. Rotherham at home, I mean. But I think in general, he's really stepped his game up and added a lot of goals to his game. So yeah, I'd go for Sam Smith. But he wasn't at Newcastle, really, so it can't really be him, can it?
Absolutely can be included. That is allowed. He's had a cracking season. And yeah, sad not to see him there. But yeah, we got through it without him. That was one of my main worries in the run-up to this week. I thought we were going to miss him massively, but players around him stepped up to the play. And yeah, unbelievably, Cambridge United, we beat Newcastle at St James' Park. Quite an amazing day.
There's one big thing we haven't mentioned. Yellow shorts, amber shorts.
That's the unsung hero.
Owen Kiernan's agenda.
This is my agenda. And if anyone from the club is listening, Gaz in particular, next season's kit, amber shorts, please. You
know, I'm fully behind it. It looks so much better.
It's so unique as well. Like, especially in English football, like, I, you know, perhaps there's a really obvious example that I can't think of, but I can't think of an all yellow kit in English football, so it would be quite unique for us, and we've got history with it, like we were saying off air, you know, we've played in that in the 70s and things like that, so I'm all for it.
Yeah, first Wembley appearance in 1990, all yellow. Beat Chesterfield, beat Oldham last year in all yellow. I think we were dead and buried after 20 minutes, but the power of the yellow shorts came through that day. Yeah, obviously when we beat Cheltenham 5-0 this season as well, amber shorts. So yeah, you're going to hear a lot more about this from me on the pod.
imagine if we turn our home kit, if we wear amber shorts on the next season, we just win every single home game.
Well, I mean, it's
you have a point. Yeah, it's bound to happen. Yeah,
we might be in the net, like the market for a new podcast name. You know, after recent events, we could be called the Yellow Short Podcast. Just to try and
original, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, mate. Yeah, and just before we go, Liam asked, Liam asked, do you need permission to put up a statue? And my question to Liam would be, who would you have the statue of? I mean, we could have it of Bonner, Ironside, Mitov, Ian Dahler, I mean, all the yellow shorts. So, like, quick answers from each of you. Julian, who would your statue be from the game on Saturday?
Well, it's got to be the Nibbler, hasn't it? It's got to be Harvey Nibbs, surely. The Nibbler.
Yeah, the Nibbler for Julian. Tom, who for you?
Probably Big Joe Ironside.
Oh, that's boring, isn't it?
Arm aloft, pointed towards the away end.
Jordan, who's yours?
Got to be just, thinking of budget, we probably couldn't afford a whole person. So how about just like the gilet that Mark Bonner wears?
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, love that. Owen?
I'd again, thinking of a budget, I'd go for a massive VAR monitor, you know, like just a telly on a stick.
Decision no go. No.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was an emotional roller coaster, and I feel like tonight's been an emotional roller coaster too. We've got through it, much like the weekend. Julian Roberts, thank you.
Thanks, mate. Have a good one.
Tom Walker, thank you.
Thank you very much. Been a pleasure.
Jordan Warland, thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
And Owen Kiernan, thank you.
Always a pleasure. Cheers.